favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Like it.
Here's the thing, no, because like Subway also, like my specific sandwich from Subway, just tastes like undergrad to me. There was a Subway on campus, and DJ used to work at a Subway.
Oh my god, no, you're right. Subway tastes like early 20s.
Yeah.
Subway tastes like your early 20s.
Like specifically like their BLT, or yeah, their BLTs with like my specific, all of the shit that I normally put on it. Like I'm just like,
yeah,
it's my undergrad career.
The ingredients are still there.
Yeah, it tastes exactly the same.
That was my like trying to transfer and like in the middle of a recession food right there. Like, well, I can buy this and it'll last me the whole day.
Yeah, so. And plus that's back when like footlongs were actually $5.
Well, they were actually $5. Oh,
gosh,
we need a sequel to that.
All right, ready?
Yeah, fuck it, let's go.
I mean, there's no segue. I have nothing. My brain is completely shot. But
eat at Subway.
Anyway, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and as always, I am joined by Mr. Anthony Fuentes. I don't have anything clever. What's your title?
Your brain
today?
Is fried today, isn't it? Sir, fuck, my brain's dead, too.
Brain dead Anthony Fuentes. Oh, there we go.
Anthony Loomis. Bad detective.
Brain dead Anthony Fuentes. So today, as a sort of nod to the, because we're wrapping up our sixth month with the podcast. So this is really cool. So in order to do that, we wanted to kind of look back at our very first month, which is so weird because this is also our 30th episode.
Dude, month one seems like a million fucking years
ago. Doesn't
it
feel like forever ago?
I can't even compute it. Like, I just can't.
It was October.
Oh my, what the fuck happened to this whole year?
Honestly, I don't know. This year has truly flown by, and the fact that this has been a constant throughout the entire chaotic 6 months that it has been really cool. But,
yeah, I'm surprised. But yeah.
You've seen it in the title. You know what we're talking about. We are talking about our very first sequel. We're talking about Halloween 2.
Yay! Halloween 2!
Anthony's been very excited about this. Almost as excited as he was about Halloween 1, but not necessarily.
Yeah, which is, I think, my feelings on the whole film.
The film in general.
Just generally. But also, again, if you're following us immediately after listening to Halloween 1, hello, it's Halloween 2, and it might, I don't know, be fun, but we're going to be doing the same production bit as we did before. Not as long, because there's not as big a production, really. Like, you know, Halloween 1 was a fundamental, crazy ride, and this was like...
I don't even remember half of the shit we said in Halloween 1.
We were thorough.
I should have listened to it before we recorded this, but I know you did.
We gave them a lot of information. This time I was like, all right, streamline.
I know you did a lot of, like, back work, as I mentioned this off air, but... when I was watching the movie last night, I struggled to keep my eyes open because it was very late and I'm very tired because I work many hours.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, it's not a well-paced film.
Yeah, that's exactly, actually, you...
You were in the middle of saying it right now,
I was in the middle
of
saying it, but the pacing is not as... It leaves much to be desired, I feel.
Yeah, because the first Halloween is paced almost immaculately.
I needed this.
Yeah. This one's like, I don't know. We'll talk about
it
again, as we always will. But would you like to give us IMDb's summation?
So, in the brief words of IMDb, while Sheriff Brackett and Dr. Loomis hunt for Michael Myers, a traumatized Laurie is rushed to the hospital, and the serial killer, Michael Myers, is not far behind her.
Yeah, this whole summation does not take into account that Laurie Strode is in, like, 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, she's like really. This is truly Dr. Loomis's.
Yeah, movie. It's his movie. It was his definite it's transition. His movie, yeah,
and Laurie kind of comes in and out as needed. Mm-hmm. There's like some unnecessary like. There's the ambulance guy who's in love with her.
Yeah, there's like a whole slew of people. Also,
there's like some like there's a wacky barrage of side characters. In yes, this, and all of them die. Well, not all of them.
I wouldn't go as far as call them characters. I'd say they're appropriate fodder.
Lamps with slight personalities.
Yes, exactly. Caricature lamps, I would say.
But no, and it's just like, well, first of all, this paramedic, I'm just like, you have to at least, I can only assume, completed community college.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she's still in high school, last I checked, unless in the span of 30 seconds of Halloween 1 and Halloween 2, she completed high school.
Yeah.
Which, if you watch Halloween 1 and then Halloween 2, the beginning of Halloween 2 is the last 5 seconds of Halloween 1.
Yeah, it comes right off. And it's just like yeah, that it's weird because it's like there is that age disparity, yeah. But also it's the 70s. People are just anyway, worse.
It's the 80s.
No, but the story takes place in the 70s. But it is 1981. That's true.
Late 70s.
Late 70s.
Anyway,
right.
Let's get into it. It was written by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was directed by Rick Rosenthal. And obviously starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Donald Pleasance.
The only names worthy of note, honestly. Yeah, everyone in the whole else, thing.
Again, caricatures with lamp. Or caricatures with lamp.
Oh my god. They're human beings, Alex. You are dead.
Characters with slight personalities.
Yes.
That end up getting murdered.
Yeah, they get murdered very viciously in this one. Yeah, there's too. Very viciously.
There's a lot of murders in this, for sure.
And there's particular reasons why it was presented the way it was, which we'll get into when we discuss the making of this motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm just along for the ride. I barely skimmed this, so.
See?
I'm learning along with the audience this week. It's been a really long week, guys.
Well, I will inform you as much as I can.
Oh yeah, no, I'm excited to learn. For the box office for this movie, the budget was $2.5 million.
That's a lot more than the first movie's budget.
Yeah. So they because of I'm assuming the resounding success.
Mm-hmm.
Of the first one, but $2.5 million, and it was released on October 30th, 1981.
Oh, right before Halloween. Ooh.
Well, the marketing was sort of on. They kind of had the marketing locked down for the Halloween franchise,
and I think they're tied to it now. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, now, like, I think the latest one came out on Halloween. No, it came out, like, months before.
It came out a couple weeks before.
Yeah, it came out, like weeks before.
Yeah.
I think one of the Rob Zombie ones came out, like...
Summer. It was a summer movie.
What was?
Was it? Oh, wait.
No, I thought a Rob Zombie remake came out, like, on Halloween. Like, literally on the 31st.
I can't remember. It's been so long since I watched it.
Anyway. So, it's gross USA earnings in the box office for Halloween 2, because that's what we're talking about. Yep. That's what we're here to discuss.
That's right.
$25,533,818.
You did a really good job on that number read like that. Fuck yeah.
I'm not entirely brain dead.
I can read, sir. but yeah, obviously not as much money as the first film, but still pretty successful for a horror film, especially considering the profitability here. Like, it made basically 10 times its budget, whatever.
I actually surprised myself with that. I was expecting to just cut myself off and be like...
800 and blah, blah, blah.
Well, no, 25,000, a little over, like, I was just going to round myself out. But no, yeah, they actually did pretty good. And obviously, like, you know, with a $2.5 million budget, obviously there was some...
demand for more. and a lot more.
And we got... a lot more.
And you guys got a lot of podcasts coming up, so yes.
Yeah, right? When did the first one come out? What year?
78. Yes.
So we actually have a good length of time.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens within that time frame, like regarding slashers.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the birth of the genre, mm-hmm. and then this you're seeing, by the time this is released, the genre has really established itself. Which gets us to how we're going to set the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
So the first Halloween movie, as you've heard in our original podcast, obviously, was fucking huge. And as a result of this revolutionary film, there was a shit ton of imitators right off its back. So slashers began hitting their stride and upping the violence with each subsequent installment from this first Halloween film. The ones that have come from this between the original film and its sequels include When a Stranger Calls,
mm-hmm.
The Silent Scream, Tourist Trap, He Knows You're Alone, Prom Night, Terror Train, and of course, Friday the 13th. Jamie Lee Curtis was in two of those movies.
Mm.
Yeah.
I only know one of them.
Was it Prom Night?
Prom Night.
Yeah, I think she was on Terror Train also.
That was going to be my guess if you were going to make me guess. But When a Stranger Calls was also a really great one. It's a classic.
I think, honestly, like, this was in peak creativity because these titles were awesome.
No, When a Stranger Calls is also, like, one of, like, those, like, great timeless stories for me. Like, oh, it's so good.
It's a...
Yeah, they've remade it a bunch of times, and each time I'm still just like, it stresses me out. Because also, growing up, I was a babysitter. Like,
oh, yeah. No, you're like, I feel the target on my back watching this right now.
Yeah, of course.
But with this explosion of slasher films and the still reigning success of the first film in people's minds, a sequel to Halloween was obviously in the works, but reluctantly so by its creator and ultimately key to its success, John Carpenter. Now, Carpenter was of the mind that there was not much story left to tell regarding Michael Myers. But, of course, Irwin Yablans, the producer of these films, he wanted some more. And this is during this time that sequels were actually hardly ever made in Hollywood, so the idea of more was kind of absurd in the context of everything.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, a time? Like, clearly I was not alive at this point, but, like, can you imagine, like, a time where sequels or, like, remakes or like anything was just like not really like it was just like nah that's not really the market,
right? I'm actually having a harder time imagining just consistent original movies.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know that anymore.
That's the thing, like, that's what I'm saying is like, yeah. I'm just so used to anyway.
I know you are. Yes, right? Like, it's non it's franchise. Yeah. Franchise every
well,
time.
Well, it's franchise and it's sequels and it's remakes upon remakes upon remakes. Literally, like, the fact that I've had 4 Spider-Man reiterations in my lifetime.
Oh my god, you're right. Dude, that's fucking weird.
Yeah.
And, like, not a lot of good ones.
I mean, I enjoy Spider-Man, but I'm just like, okay, we're just gonna keep telling the story. All right.
Cool.
And it's also just like, they're all Peter Parker.
Yeah. Give me Miles Morales. Oh, wait, Into the Spider-Verse was
Into
Miles
the
Morales.
Yeah, Into That's the right. Spider-Verse was Miles Morales. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but, like, I'm excited because you get a lot of different, obviously, you get all of them.
Man,
so.
You're right, 4 interpretations of this story. Mm-hmm. Damn. Okay. Yeah. This is a whole different era.
Yes. And also this is us taking a hard right into nerd territory.
We're just blown away. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, the mindset for all this back in the day was that if people had already seen the first one, why would they pay for another?
Yeah. Like, no, that makes sense.
Yeah. That was Godfather too. And actually had that argument against it.
Well, and, you know, I think to an extent, a lot of people still have that mindset today.
You know, people like idolize, I feel like, that mindset now, because mm-hmm. They're like, why would you want a sequel to Blue? But back in the day, it was like, why would you want a sequel to Blue?
Right. Well, now I think they're a lot more, like, douchey about it.
Yes, exactly.
Like, they're a lot more, like, on their high horse and think they're, like, super elitist about mm-hmm. it.
And good sequels, me.
and now there's, like, us who, like, you know, last week were just like, don't do a sequel to Hush. It doesn't
yes.
need one.
That's a good point. We are hypocrites here sometimes, and that's okay, because this is America. Ma'am.
And at least we acknowledge that sometimes we're hypocrites, and that's okay.
Yes, see? We're also very self-deprecating, so, you know, we might push it a little further, but who knows?
It's fine. Whatever. Yeah.
But, of course, the people obviously were very, very, just, again, anti-sequel, but Yablans was set. Like, his mind was set that he saw more in Halloween than basically what they had given. But first, Yablans and Carpenter would want to make a film called The Fog, as Carpenter didn't want his follow-up to Halloween to be the sequel. He wanted one more original film before even thinking about that. Yablans was reluctant, but he did agree to these terms and made the agreement with Carpenter verbally that they would talk about Halloween 2 after The Fog was made. However, Irwin Yablans slipped the fuck up. And he actually had a conversation with a studio executive on a plane regarding what he's doing next, and he revealed his fucking cards. he said that we are going to do a movie called The Fog with John Carpenter, as well as the sequel to Halloween. Now, the person he was talking to was the head of Avco Embassy, which we talked about last time, did Carpenter's later films. His name was Bob Raimi. So soon after this plane ride, Avco Embassy announced that it would be making The Fog with John Carpenter. And your bland was pissed.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, he got, it's Hollywood back
well,
in the
also,
day.
I'm just like, who, like, how did you make phone calls on a plane?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
How do people make phone? I'm still caught up
in
on
the
that.
'70s, right?
Well, I mean, I know, like, I'm sure, like, the president can still make phone calls on a plane.
Well, soon after this plane ride, so not like immediately stepping off the tarp, but it was like pretty
no,
close
the
after.
You wrote he had a conversation on a plane.
Oh, I don't think I said that though, did I?
Oh, yeah. Cite your sources, motherfucker. No. Well,
he had a conversation with somebody while they were sitting next to each other on the plane.
Oh,
you could have other ways of conversing on planes, just so you know. I've done it before.
I literally thought you meant, like, on the phone.
No. You know, sometimes when you sit next to somebody, you might say words occasionally. I know the stewardess, you for sure have to sometimes. Someone's tired. You're like... But how? Did he call collect? Anyways, your plans got fucked. That's the gist of it.
Man.
He was so pissed, though, of what Bob Raimi and Carpenter did, he actually sued them over this deal.
Wow.
Yeah, he fucking sued them. But for this not to go any further, he actually made a compromise. Avco Embassy was allowed to make The Fog. And your bland was able to lock down Carpenter for at least some involvement for Halloween 2.
Okay.
Yeah, so before it was pursued even harder, Carpenter just lamented, and it's like, fine, I'll work on some of Halloween 2. Now, he decided not to direct. He had that right, so he didn't have to take on the director's chair. Specifically, he said, I had made that film once, and I did not want to do it again, as the summation of that. He did, however, write it. With, of course, Deborah Hill. And they both, of course, made the first one happen. And they also agreed to produce. So that's a pretty big get, right?
They
have the name.
They still agreed to do a lot.
Yes, a big, big creative portion of the film. But even better for your plans, all the original surviving cast members decided to return as well, with the one exception being Nick Castle, the original man behind the mask, as he was actually starting to get into his directing career. But Carpenter's lack of enthusiasm was not actually exclusive to him. Most of the team from the first film had felt that it was good enough on its own as a self-contained story. In fact, special effects director of the first film, Tommy Lee Wallace, was in line to direct. He wasn't necessarily excited about doing a Halloween film, but he was excited about it being a big opportunity and him getting to direct the film. But of course, as we, the Horrible People's Podcast, always discuss the development of these films, a lot of times pretty fucky.
It's so fucky.
It oftentimes is just very fucky, and this is no different.
All right.
So, Alex, let us know how fucky it was.
Yeah, let's go through this together.
Yes.
And hopefully I won't make another huge mistake like I did last time.
Like, how did they talk to each other on... They were next to each other on the set. It's okay.
One plus one?
No.
Yeah. Anyway. John Carpenter describes the writing process for the sequel as follows. Quote, mainly dealt with a lot of beer sitting in front of a typewriter saying, what the fuck am I doing? I don't know. Which can relate.
That's...
Can absolutely relate.
Oh, yeah.
and we're going to get into this because this is where I'm going to rant for a moment. The twist of Laurie Strode and Michael Myers being siblings itself was after a particularly heavy booze binge. Though normally Carpenter drank at least a 6-pack a day while writing Halloween 2.
Oh, yeah.
He has stated that in retrospect, this may have led to some bad decisions. You fucking think, Carpenter? You fucking think?
I mean...
Because, okay, I knew that they were technically, like, canonically siblings.
Yes.
Going into seeing it for the first, to see the movie for the first time. So I go through the first movie and I'm fucking blown away. Mm-hmm. But then I get to the end of it and I'm like, aren't they supposed to be siblings?
You're waiting for the, connection.
I'm waiting for the punch. I'm waiting for them to be like, or even some like little throwaway fucking whimsical me line. Like, we're just like, oh yeah, remember when you were siblings? Like, no.
Splash.
Yeah. I was waiting for something in the first movie and it never fucking came until the second movie where I'm just like sitting there and I'm like, that's the best you can fucking do, where it's just like an adoption, secret adoption that is never mentioned. There's no baby in the initial sequence in the first movie. There's nothing.
Well, I mean, it wasn't planned.
I know. Well, and that's what DJ ended up explaining to me. Like, mm-hmm. DJ was just like, well, yeah, because they didn't end up making it a thing until the second movie, until mm-hmm. after the first one. And I was like, I hate it.
You're like, give me some proper build up, damn it.
I know. And we all know how I'm a stickler for details.
Yeah, this was completely absent, obviously, from the first one. I mean, for obvious reasons, but even then, like, they really kind of just shit it out.
No,
I feel like
then,
in this one.
Yeah, even then, it was just like the random, like, characters with barely personalities walking down the hallway, and like, she's just like, ah, yes, they were siblings. Like, I'm not reading my lines off of this piece of paper.
You're like, wow, isn't that a special thing? Hey, by the way, let's fuck in the pool thingy over there.
Yeah, which is totally, like, looks like it's a safe temperature.
It does. Okay, well, that scene I wanted to talk about a little bit, because there's some stupid stuff in there.
Anyway, so the script was originally going to take place in a high-rise apartment building, which... Fun fact.
Yeah. Hill, would have been child's play. Cool.
Right? Hill and Carpenter were also debating on when the film should take place, going between years after the original film or the same night. They ended up, obviously, going with the latter, which I think was a very smart decision on their part.
I think it really helped define the sequel.
Yeah.
It does. Like, it would be so pedestrian otherwise.
Yeah. Did you mess up his name here?
Erwin Yablans?
Yablans? Okay. Yablans did not like the script, describing it as, quote, pedestrian. All right.
Oh, I see what the... Y'all Bands. I like that name better.
Well, now we have to keep it in.
Now we have to... Y'all Bands. No, he sounds like a moderator for, like, a shitty alt-right forum.
Yeah.
We can't have any libs talking here. Y'all Bands. Damn, that's why we voted him.
Anthony can't spell. Okay. Tommy Lee Wallace was also not a fan of the script, finding himself disappointed in the story he was set to direct. He felt the sequel was, quote, the antithesis of what the first film stood for.
Yeah, that is actually directly from an interview.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's, like, real... Well, I don't know, because, like, the first one, I didn't feel like it was particularly, like, highbrow in any... way?
I guess not, but, like...
I mean...
It's polished, I think, enough in a way that, like...
There can be an antithesis.
Yeah. There could, like, somebody that takes that polish and, like, corrupts the fuck out of
it. No, yeah. I agree. A particular sour point for Yablans and Wallace was the significant amount of gore in the script. They both felt that the power of suggestion was what separated Halloween from its imitators. Carpenter, however, had a distinct reasoning for this sudden change. All of his imitators changed the genre, and the Halloween franchise had to keep up, or audiences would also lose interest, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. He's a money guy. Well, Carpenter's all about, like, this is how we get the
also,
dollars.
I mean, like, looking at the films mentioned previously, you're also, like, I mean, even, like, just looking at, like, Friday the 13th or, like, Prom Night.
Oh, my
night,
God, yeah.
Like, the amount of blood used in these films are ridiculous.
And you gotta think about it. Halloween, or Friday the 13th, released a year before, made a lot more money in this film.
Yeah. No, yeah. It totally. Mm-hmm. So Wallace agreed that horror had changed, but could not bring himself to direct the script that was given to him, and thus he withdrew from the project and felt terrible about it, saying, I felt doubly horrible because it was my friends and my crew and my pals.
Yeah, he seemed really broken up when I saw his interview.
Yeah.
He was just like, we did this together, man. Like, we were the fundamental fuckers who changed
that
horror.
Sucks.
And it's like, here's your shit script. He's like, well, that's not what I did the first time.
Well, yeah, and it sucks, because it also just sounds like he wanted to truly just direct a sequel in, like, the true essence of a sequel being, like, a retelling of Halloween.
Yeah, he wanted to do it in that style. He's like, that was a style that I fell in love with.
The stylistic differences between 1 and 2 are very prominent.
They are. They're not as immediately noticeable, but as the movie goes along, it becomes like 80s slasher for sure, which we're going to talk about when we do the questions, obviously.
Yeah. So the production team was in search of a new director. Deborah Hill was being considered for the role of director, but did not want to be considered John Carpenter's protege, which I can understand.
She wanted to have her own path, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Television director Rick Rosenthal happened to share an agent with John Carpenter and got wind that they were looking for someone to take on the sequel. Rosenthal and his agent managed to convince Carpenter that he was the right man for the job, and he was given the opportunity to direct the sequel. Dean Cundey also came back as cinematographer, turning down an opportunity to work on Poltergeist out of loyalty to the project.
Oh, that one was kind of sad. Seeing his interview, he was very much just like, but you know, like, I helped start this, so I had to stop.
See, here's the thing. It's like, what sucks is, like, I mean, you see this, like, in most, not genres, in most, like, industries.
Mm-hmm.
You see this in a lot of industries. Like, you know, your people are your people. You work with your people.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You know how what the workflow is. You know, it's not going to fuck up. And you're just like, yeah, we succeed together, so let's keep succeeding. Until, like, you don't, the shit starts, ship just taking apart as you keep going.
I mean, to an extent, that's why this podcast works. Because we work together on a business level. So we know, like, what works and how we operate. Work together.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes, that
like,
makes
to
sense.
An extent, we're effective communicators with each other because we've worked together, you know?
Precisely. Bring in some other motherfuckers here. You're like, yeah. Yeah, I guess it was a fun movie. Fuck you.
I know. Like, that's why I was just like, eh.
But also, it was funny because the agents and Rosenthal, when I saw them talking about it, they were talking about it like it was a ruse. We're like, and we're going to convince Carpenter, like, there's this young up-and-comer, and you could, it was like a Rocky fight. Like, it was just like, yeah, he can go the distance. Like, that was the pitch, basically.
Oh my gosh.
But I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think Carpenter really gave a fuck as much by this point.
At this point, he seems sort of like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, give me the fucking Rosenthal guy. Whatever.
Since Nick Castle was out as Michael Myers, the team was on the hunt for a new shape and found it thanks to a clever move by an ambitious stuntman.
Yeah, this is a really funny move, actually. Funny name, too.
Dick Warlock.
Good old Dick Warlock. That's his,
amazing. I got the role of Michael Myers by putting on the Michael Myers mask, which he found on a table, and walking into Rick Rosenthal's office.
Yes.
He then stood motionless as Rosenthal asked repeatedly what he was doing there. Warlock did not answer immediately and let Rosenthal get nervous until he finally took off the mask and asked if he could play the part. This is amazing.
That's so funny. Yes.
Rosenthal was impressed and cast Dick Warlock as Michael Myers with the simple words, "If Deborah doesn't care, I don't care." They got along very well on set.
Yeah, no, these guys, when I saw them talking, they're like, geez.
Yeah.
Like, they were straight up just like, he was literally like, what the fuck are you doing here? And he just didn't, he didn't move. And the thing is, Warlock was fucking Richard Warlock over here. He was actually
Dickie
there.
Dickie Warlock.
Good old Dickie. Yeah. Dickie W. Lock. But yeah. No, he was actually there to talk about the stunts. Mm. Like, he was not there at all to get the part. But when he saw the mask, he's like, fuck it, I'm going for it. Like, I'm going for it.
He saw an opportunity and he took it.
Yeah, literally, he was talking to Deborah Hill. She's like, oh yeah, go talk to Rick to, you know, confirm the job. And on the way, he was like, mask, Rosenthal, he doesn't know I'm coming. Fuck it. Fuck it.
Going for it.
And you know what? I applaud this man. That was
totally
a good fucking move.
Totally. That's like, you know, that takes like, you know, balls.
That's,
for
that's
sure.
Some fucking cojones. Yeah. Mr. Dick Warlock.
Dickie Warlock.
Dickie Warlock. Anyway. I love that.
Unfortunately, the mask Warlock used was the same one from the first film, which had been underneath Deborah Hill's bed for many years and had begun to yellow, which is gross.
You can definitely see it, too.
Hill was a heavy smoker, so it was definitely yellow.
Mm-hmm.
The mask also fit his face differently, as he had a different body type than Nick Castle, but Warlock was at least able to keep the mask, as the film was supposed to be the last one with Michael Myers.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, he got to keep the original Halloween mask, which is pretty fucking cool, but yeah, his face was too big.
Well, this was, I mean, you can kind of see, because it looks kind of more stretched.
His cheeks are popping out. Yeah.
It's... But, I mean, I like this, because it's also, I think it's cool that he gets to keep it, because, like, this was also supposed to be the last one.
Mm-hmm. They really were, like, we're wrapping up Myers' story.
Well, I mean, the end of this movie, like, you think he's pretty toast.
He is, yeah.
Quite literally.
He's a little toasty.
A little toasty by the end of the movie. I'm hilarious. It's 8:42.
I know,
okay.
We're all fine.
Anyway, so Jamie Lee Curtis used this film as her retirement from the title of Scream Queen, which she earned by appearing in films like Halloween, Prom Night, The Fog, and Terror Train. So she's like the OG Scream Queen.
Yeah, she basically created the namesake.
Oh, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Technically, though, she still had one slasher left to release called Road Games, which would be in theaters almost 3 weeks after Halloween 2.
Yeah, so I think that was this Road Games producers being like, no, we need to be the last slasher.
We're the last ones.
Yeah, we're done. No, she's still a Scream Queen, God damn it.
They had considered making the film in 3D, which is wild, but had found it to be far too expensive, which also understandable.
Yes.
So with everything ready to go, finally, after all the fuckery that ensued, a regular old 2D Halloween 2 was now in production.
Yep. And, I mean, this is still the time where studios, they would experiment with Jaws 3D and Friday the 13th 3D and all that good stuff. So, you know, it was in the cards, but ultimately it's like, it's still a Halloween film. Like, it's still fucking $2.5 million. Yeah. We're not going to do that. Like, we need that profitability.
Mm-hmm.
But then they did finally get to, of course, make the film. And Rick Rosenthal, he really wanted this to be a straight continuation of Halloween, starting from the moment Myers is shot at the end of the first film, which you obviously see in the beginning of this film. Because of this, he also knew his directorial style had to match Carpenter's, or at least imitate it very, very well. He stuck with this rule for the first portion of the film, but has stated that once the story makes its way to the hospital, he was able to, quote, let loose.
Nice.
And I think you can see
it. There is a very obvious transition, which actually kind of grabbed my attention.
Really?
It was very interesting because I could kind of notice it. Because watching it, seeing it kind of go from it being a Carpenter film, mm-hmm, to a Rosenthal film, like, you can...
It's kind of obvious, yeah.
It's obvious, but it's remarkably smooth. Like, it transitions well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like one scene is Carpenter, one scene's Rosenthal.
Yeah, then it's like a music video, fucking.
Yeah, it goes very well. And then, but once it transitions, I'm just like, once we start seeing, like, I think for me, the outside scenes feel more Carpenter.
They do, absolutely.
And then once you're in the hospital, because, like, you know, the second half of the film mostly takes place in the hospital.
Yeah, you actually don't get a lot of outside shit except Loomis, like, trying to come back. Yeah, which, I mean, but then you're right, because it becomes more 80s slasher, mm-hmm, in the hospital, yeah, for sure. And for a lot of the film, it's like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, hospitals are one of those, like, creepy places that are typically used for horror films that, mm-hmm, are, like, everyone's creeped out by. Which also, the most empty hospital...
Yeah, in the fucking world?
Yeah, ever?
like, there's a serial killer on the loose. It's Halloween. Shouldn't people be getting into trouble?
Yeah, shouldn't... Like, I mean, you see, like, the little kid and, like, everything. And it's just like, shouldn't there be more chaos? Question mark?
But no. I mean, there's kind of specific reasons for that. So the script actually had, again, as we talk about this, most of the film was set in the hospital. And the teen ended up using one in Pasadena that, quite frankly, it was just not being used.
Okay.
Like... So I think they just thought in their mind, like, if it's not being used, I guess we can keep it kind of empty, because it really was, like, a spare hospital in Pasadena, which I don't understand.
Just a spare hospital?
I think it was more specialized, but there weren't a lot of people in it, so they were able to use it.
Was it, like, a wing of a hospital that wasn't being used?
It was, like, a little medical center.
Weird.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. It's also, in the movie, they go between calling it a hospital and calling it a clinic.
Yeah, so I think they were confused as well, honestly.
And I thought that was really interesting, because that actually tripped me up as, like, a viewer. I'm like, mm-hmm, is it, like... Because I'm like, she's not in urgent care.
Yeah. Like, she's not, no.
Like...
This is, like, most menacing murder in the whole town. They're like, I had to throw her in the fucking, like, wing over there.
And also just because I'm a fucking adult, I'm like, that's the difference between, like, a $20 copay and a $150 copay.
Yeah, I know. Like, you're thinking the hard stuff right there, yeah.
Like, well, also, I'm like... Like, there's a difference between the urgent care and the ER. Like, absolutely. Come on now. Let's clarify.
Like, she'll be fine. She's just super stressed. It's okay. But they actually thought this would be a huge break because shooting in a regular hospital would normally be really expensive because of the foot traffic. And they're like, cool. We actually have an opportunity here. Not so, as there was one major issue with this fucking hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It was near an airport.
Oh, God.
And this being Los Angeles, sometimes planes will be backed up and hover around for long stretches of time. Yes. So it got to the point where when they would shoot, they actually had to put a scout on top of the building to signal the crew when they're like, okay, there's no planes. Go. That was the process.
Someone got paid to stand on a roof and signal when there were airplanes coming.
Like, blind. Ah, shit. Okay. Rapid. Just read your lines. We're fine. No plane. But this was actually very annoying for the actors, who were a combination of returning actors from the first film, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and new knife fodder, who mostly came from an acting class that Rosenthal had attended.
Nice.
Yeah, so he was pulling from his own resources there. But Deborah Hill was actually on set for most of the filming, as producer.
Mm-hmm.
So she was definitely spearheading a lot of, like, the quality control stuff here. But Dick Warlock actually attempted to get notes from Deborah Hill regarding his walk, thinking it was too slow and, like, really, really wanting to do the character justice. Hill, I don't know what happened here. She seemed kind of dismissive because she said it was fine, but later lamented that Warlock's Myers was too slow. She said this in an interview talking about retrospective Halloween shit. This actually would make Warlock pretty angry, as he was really, like, had his heart set on being Michael Myers. And he's like, you could have told me to walk faster. Like, he was really sad about that, unfortunately.
That sucks.
I know.
Well, also, like, I know that Deborah Hill was on set, but also, where's Rosenthal? Isn't he directing?
Yeah, but again, like, this is Deborah Hill's baby.
No, I mean,
Carpenter.
I totally get it.
I think he's...
I totally get it. And I know, like, it probably makes sense, like, him wanting to get feedback from Hill. Like, I totally understand that.
Yeah. He really should have talked to Rosenthal. I mean, sure, they're buds.
Could have talked to freaking Carpenter, too.
Maybe. I mean, Carpenter...
I mean, also, who really would want to talk to Carpenter about that?
He has really, as we're getting into right now, he has a very weird relationship with this film. So Rosenthal actually wanted the film to play more like a thriller than what was becoming a conventional slasher at the time. Yeah. But Carpenter's request for more gore meant that Rosenthal had to stray a bit from his own vision of the film, which is he had a really hard time doing. This was actually evident in a rough cut of the film, which Carpenter saw and called, quote, about as scary as Quincy. Side note, Quincy is a medical drama from the 70s, and it ran for 148 episodes, and it's just not scary. So,
oh, okay. I was just like, I need some clarification.
You're like, the killer Quincy?
No, I was just like, what?
No, medical drama from the 70s, known for being pretty benign. Oh, so,
it's a medical mystery drama.
Oh, yes, a benign medical mystery drama.
So not like Grey's Anatomy?
I don't even know, really.
Oh, okay.
Carpenter was just like, as the blamest fucking reference he could make, that was it.
Aw.
Because, you know, Carpenter's a contrarian smartass.
Right.
We've been over that.
No, yes, we're well aware.
I believe last time you called him a contrarian bitch. But, like, in a fun way.
I'm sure. I mean, really, when don't I?
You're
but, like
that contrarian bitch. But Carpenter and the editor of the original Halloween...
I can't believe how contrarian I was about him being contrarian in our very first month of doing this podcast.
I know, right? I skipped the thingy there.
Sorry, go ahead.
But Carpenter had no control over the actual production of the film when Rosenthal was working on it. But he did have control of the post-production, and he actually used his power to, quote, fix up some of the scenes in Halloween 2. So Carpenter and the editor of the original Halloween's television cut, his name is Skip Skulnick.
Very cool
name. Very cool name. Very hippie stock, I'm sure. Ended up cutting 14 minutes of Rosenthal's film.
Wow.
Yeah, that's deep, deep fucking cuts for your producer to make. Carpenter decided to make some even bigger changes, actually. He ended up refilming all of the death scenes to add gore to the film, add more gore,
which is awesome. Well, awesome and like wild, because because one of the deaths is one of the nurses getting like
needle in the eye.
No, one of the paramedic like slips and knocks himself off out because he walks into a room and slips, and one of the nurses, like I think, I don't even know how Michael Myers did this, but, like, literally sets up a tube, like, in an IV.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, literally exsanguinates this poor woman, like, yeah. Like, and she's completely, like, all of her blood is on the floor.
Yeah, she's, all, like, all motionlessly just fucking, like, yeah, like, there.
You're right, but, like, all of her blood is on the floor.
I mean, you gotta remember, Michael Myers is the most trolly killer of the it's icons.
True. No, I totally agree. But it was just very funny to watch because then also he slips and hits his head. And
yeah.
Out. But also
among blades, like,
exactly. It's the banana peel of the horror world. Is, yeah. Like
in the most sequel to one of the most iconic films in horror history, we were given the banana peel kill.
Yes, exactly.
That's hilarious. Well, that,
and also, like, the nurse was also very, like, not pale.
Yeah, so she point, wasn't.
To the point that I was really confused. I'm like, is she actually dead? What's going on here? But anyway, that's conversation for later.
Not sticklers for the details in these ones.
Which is very unfortunate, considering but, I am who I am.
Yeah, exactly. Carpenter had also found a few other errors in there, but one particularly big one. Carpenter realized that there was no reason for Michael to make his way to the hospital. So he added a scene where a child is listening to news reports and runs into Michael Myers on the streets, which is, like, a very obviously kind of, like, cut-in kind of mm-hmm. scene. But that was supposed to be how Carpenter hears about where Laurie Strode's going and makes his way to the hospital. That was not originally filmed. But upon learning of all these changes, Rosenthal stated that Carpenter, quote, ruined my carefully paced film.
Jesus Christ. It wasn't that carefully paced, Rosenthal.
I mean, yeah, even if you take out the gore stuff, like, it's... Also... There's pacing problems.
14 minutes?
14 minutes.
I don't think I would have stayed awake for the 14 minutes.
No, that actually... I mean, who knows what those fucking 14 minutes were, really?
I can't imagine they make the film faster. Important.
Yes. Yes.
I don't think I would have gained anything more from the film in 14 minutes. I don't.
No. It's just more shitty dialogue with his actor friends, probably. Like, honestly. But Carpenter once again did the music, this time with the help of Star Trek The Motion Picture composer Alan Howarth? Howarth?
Howarth.
This film also opened with the song Mr. Sandman mm-hmm. by the Cordettes. This music choice was actually really well received by critics and audiences. And
also ends.
It oh, also yeah, with Mr. Yeah. Sandman, which I think, and became, you know, a staple of the franchise, obviously. But, like, it I think it works. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that really works with it. But surprisingly, no cuts were made to the film regarding violence when it came to determining its rating with the MPAA. This was really unusual, as most slashers of the era were given pretty fucking heavy cuts to avoid X ratings. Halloween 2 was given an R right off the bat with no requests, so I think that just goes to show you how much people loved Halloween 1.
Well, also, the board was probably just like, fuck it, yeah. Whatever, I'm tired.
Like, is this another, what, it's just the eye, right? How far do they cut? 2 seconds? Okay, that's fine.
Just pass it.
It's not the Kevin Bacon death. We're fine.
So, right? Yeah. So, finally, the movie's done.
It's done.
It's got its R rating. It's ready to go. We cut out 14 minutes. I don't think we missed anything.
No. Speculation, but honestly.
I don't think we're missing anything. No. Rosenthal thinks his movie was perfectly paced and it was ruined by John Carpenter.
Oh, the seriousness in your face. Jesus, I felt that.
It was ruined.
It was ruined.
No, that was just me being dramatic.
I know. It was really good.
Thank you. I'm an actor. No,
so just let's throw the mic down.
No, let's talk about the reception and release of the movie. So, Halloween was being promoted as not being a conventional horror film and something more in line with the original, as by this point, critics were vicious towards the slasher genre. This would obviously be misleading, as Carpenter's reshoots made the film more in line with slashers at the time, and critics were quick to dismiss it.
Yeah, they shot themselves in the foot on that one.
Yeah, that was stupid. Where the first film was seen as a, quote, class act by some critics, including Janet Maslin of the New York Times, for the sequel, words like tasteless and reprehensible were used.
Oh yeah, they fucking hated it.
All right.
It's your boy.
My boy.
Your
boy. Roger Ebert. One of the biggest advocates for the first film, which is great.
Yes.
Called Halloween 2 a fall from greatness.
Yes.
Time has been kinder to the film's critical reception, but its quality is divisive to this day, even among fans. At the time, however, it was still a sequel to the biggest film of one of the biggest genres in American cinema.
Yeah. It was still Halloween 2, guys.
Yeah, it was still Halloween 2. Audiences were ready for more Halloween. Definitely. Mm-hmm. So Universal purchased the distribution rights for Halloween 2 and released it on October 30th, 1981, and it opened to over $7 million on its opening weekend and managed to make around $25 million in North America, turning it into the second highest grossing horror film of 1981.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, way to come back, Halloween.
It was only surpassed by John Landis's American Werewolf in London, but outgrossed such films as The Omen 3, Friday the 13th Part 2, and The Howling. It was, however, banned in several countries for graphic violence.
And as a callback here, remember, guys, fuck John Landis.
Yeah, we don't like John Landis, so...
If you want to find out why, refer to our Twilight Zone episode and prepare for some, like, NSFW shit. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So...
Fuck John Landis. One more time. Just throw it in there.
In the years following the release of Halloween 2, the television cut of the film has actually garnered praise, but was even featured on a special Blu-ray release of the film, which is cool.
Yeah.
This cut runs 1 minute shorter than the theatrical version and has many deaths either alluded to or cut in a way to minimize the violence.
Yeah, it's oddly the censored version of the film gets a lot of love.
I kind of want to see it now.
Right?
There are even extra scenes that flesh out the characters a bit more, as well as a scene where Michael cuts off the power to the hospital, allowing for the dark look of the film to be explained.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. I think Rosenthal may have had a point, because like this cut actually gets good praise from a lot of people, mm-hmm. and it has more character moments, which yeah. I think you get more attached to the characters, because right now they're just bodies.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe he was right, because this television cut, like, people love it.
Yeah. I don't know. So in the 30th anniversary release of the film, Universal removed... Mustafa's Akkad's name from the opening, replacing it with Universal and MCA Company Presents. This was after Akkad's death by suicide bomber just a few years prior, sparking outrage from fans who boycotted the release.
Yeah, they fucked up.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. There's a lot to unpack there.
I know. Well, I mean, we talked about his death last time,
mm-hmm.
but it was one of those just sudden things. Obviously, this guy shepherded this franchise to mm-hmm. great heights. Like, he was really one of the people that had a lot of faith in it and would continue to finance it. But when that happened, and you know, Universal obviously had the rights, them replacing him was just bad fucking PR move right there.
Right. Malik Akkad, who would produce future Halloween films and son of Mustafa Akkad, called the move a disgrace, saying he's not even around to defend himself and it's classless.
Yeah.
Which, totally, hard agree.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's his son. It's like, come on, man, that's my fucking... Like, I feel the worst of it.
Right, yeah. So Universal reissued the Blu-rays with the original text and replaced discs from fans who had brought them... Who bought the first batch of copies, so... Good
on them, yeah.
At least they fixed it.
Yeah.
Years later, when reflecting on the film, John Carpenter said, Halloween 2 is an abomination and a horrible movie. I was really disappointed in it. The director has gone on and done some other films, and I think his career is launched now, but I don't think he had a feel for the material. I think that's the problem. He didn't have a feeling for what was going on.
They really threw him under the bus, like Jesus. Everybody did. All the big dogs were Deborah Hill. Everybody's just like, yeah, you know, not our fault. But like that Michael Myers and that director, they didn't understand. And it's just like, you guys wrote the movie.
Well, also, they didn't want to direct it.
Yeah, come on.
You had the opportunity and you didn't do it.
You could have directed your own script, goddammit, mm-hmm. and made it good. Well, you know, Carpenter did direct some scenes, but he did the scenes that like... For the money, to make sure it made money, and critics fucking hated it.
But, yeah, no.
But it did make money. So, you know, whatever. Maybe he was right. Who knows? But actually, there is some other bad blood associated with this film. There are actually murders associated with Halloween 2.
I'm very interested in this because I know nothing about this.
Yeah, this is a weird one. So on December 7th, 1982, Richard Delmer Boyer was in need of money and was looking to borrow some from Francis Harbitz and Eileen Rose Harbitz, an elderly couple he had been working for. Boyer was also a drug addict and was on a mix of alcohol, PCP, and cocaine when he decided to make his way to their residence.
Jeez.
Yeah, he was pretty heavy into that stuff.
That's a lot of stuff.
That's a big mix. Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff to be heavy into.
I mean, a lot of people mix alcohol and cocaine, but when you throw PCP in there, that is a party.
Well, that's not a party I want to be invited to.
No, I didn't say it was a good party. It's a fucked up party.
That's a party that, like, you know, you're passing an abandoned, like, structure in the dead of night, and you're just like, I'm just trying to get home. You're not making eye contact. Like,
and somebody was just over a fire with grain alcohol. They're just like, you want some?
No. Just say no.
Right? The couple had a history of lending Boyer money on occasion and invited him inside for dinner.
Oh, no.
Yeah. While he was in the couple's house, he had a flashback to a scene from Halloween 2 and began viciously attacking the couple in their own home. He stabbed Francis 24 times, and he stabbed Eileen Rose 19 times. Boyer walked away with $50 in cash.
That's it?
$50. All this for $50.
Oh, man.
Their bodies were actually discovered several days later by the couple's son, William.
Several days?
Days.
Oh, no.
Yeah. William Harbitz had a feeling Boyer was to blame, as he knew Boyer had done gardening work for the couple. He actually owed the money, and he carried a sheath knife and became violent when drunk. Harbitz knew all this, or William knew all this. He gave this information to the police, and Boyer was soon arrested. Now, this is where the movie comes in, because during this first trial, Halloween 2 was screened for the jury due to the similarities in the description of the events and the description of Boyer's visions with certain scenes in the film. This would be the first time a Hollywood film was submitted as evidence to a murder trial in history. Boyer was soon sentenced to death, which was upheld after many retrials. This actually prompted the incident to be labeled as the Halloween 2 murders, and it sparked outrage. But actually, more outrage from people defending Halloween 2. Yeah. Many considered this association to be unfair, and Boyer was even implicated in a separate murder, though that one actually went uncharged. So he may have been kind of a bullshitter.
Mm-hmm.
This was all soon forgotten as, you know, years have went along, and Halloween managed to continue on as a franchise despite the association with Boyer and a few other blunders in the direction of Halloween.
I'm not sure if this is in the questions or not, but do you feel like Halloween 2 is to blame for this?
Nah.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I'm just like, I feel like he probably would have killed them regardless.
Yeah, I think he had that impulse in him. And then even so, like, he's probably searching for the insanity defense anyways.
Yeah, I don't...
He's like, Halloween made me do it. Like,
one of those fuckers. I don't think so. Anyway, so, Carpenter would next make a move to change the direction of the series. He wanted it to be an anthology series based on the holiday of Halloween itself rather than it to stay tied to the characters of the first two films. So this is Halloween 3.
Yes.
That we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not seen it.
Okay.
Everyone that I know who has seen it is just like, isn't that the one that has nothing to do with anything in the franchise at all ever? And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar enough with it to know.
Everybody knows.
Everyone knows. But as far as he saw it, Myers was dead and Loomis was dead, and the story had finally been told. He at last had his chance to do something fresh with the franchise, and his name was so closely attached to it that he might as well do something with
it. Exactly. He still had play. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He would also finally provide an opportunity for Tommy Lee Wallace to direct. But there would be major hurdles to overcome to make that happen, and the result would turn the iconic horror franchise from a guaranteed moneymaker to the verge of collapse. But we'll cover that when we do Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yep. Next time on Halloween, guys.
Yeah, so what? Next Halloween.
Yeah, the next... During Halloween, guys. I mean, spoiler, yeah, Halloween.
Literally next October, October.
Exactly. But yeah, so the production of that one's also pretty interesting. Again, it's a big blunder.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Because
also, just that's a fantastic title.
Right? Oh, Season of the Witch?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love
it. It's a fantastic title for a film that has nothing to do with the franchise.
Kind of iffy on the film, but you know what? I haven't seen it in so long. I don't know if it's good.
You know, as it usually is with many of these films, I've never seen it, so...
Oh, that's funny. See, that's, again, that's where we're different here. I'm a franchise player, old school kind of horror stuff. Alex has a lot of the, like, new horror down compared to me.
I'm so glad that you say that because I was thinking about this the other day and I'm just like, for a lot of it, I feel like I'm such, like, a noob to so much of, like, horror in general because I just didn't get the exposure to it growing up and I just didn't get to start watching it until I was, like, 19.
Yeah, you know? Until you were paying some bills.
Yeah, until I was, like, 18 or 19 and, like, I could, like, see it myself without, like, someone being like, I don't know how I feel about you watching that.
Yeah.
And,
like... but you, again, you have a much better understanding whenever we do Hush or something like that. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'm totally blind here.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
But, you know, now that we've went through the production here, we've got to lead into the next one. What do you actually think about this particular film?
I liked it,
I think that's a really good way of putting it, honestly.
I think I liked it. I enjoyed the direct, like...
The timeline kind of
thing? Yeah, the direct, like, yeah, continuation, I guess is the word, from the first movie to the second one. I really, I did enjoy that. Like, I thought that was actually one of the stronger points of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked that we got to see, like, kind of the impact of some of the character deaths from the first film and the second one. That was really, really cool.
The sheriff and his
daughter. Yeah, the sheriff and his daughter. Like,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I thought that was really, like, impactful because, like, in the first one, like, you don't really get to see those kinds of moments, really, in slasher films specifically. You don't really get to see the aftermath.
You don't get that. No, you don't.
Yeah. So, I think specifically in slasher films. So, to see that kind of addressed and tackled, I think is really interesting.
Yeah, with the parents of one of the victims. Like, that's really... really unusual and I think a difficult scene to pull off, really.
Yeah, no, I think they did well. They did it well. There were a couple things that were, I was still a little like, really? Like the fact that there was the fake out Michael Myers, that like the 17-year-old kid that just got murked.
Who did not walk at all like Nick Castle or Dick Warlock. He was just like kind of shuffling like, are you guys fucking looking at me? Like,
no, that was just some 17-year-old like, you know, dorky kid walking in the street and like literally Donald Pleasant was just like, I'm gonna shoot him!
Like, we could, it's fine. He has the mask on. It's his fault. Like, I'm just standing my ground.
Right. I was just like, Donald Pleasance is, like, going to shoot literally every child with a mask this Halloween, and, like...
Right? Oh, no, I think the worst part, though, is, like, he didn't even take out the kid. He literally caused a car accident, and the kid just blew up.
Yeah.
Like no, the budget was there to blow him up.
The car hit the kid, which pinned the kid to the van, which caused the car to blow up, and it's just like... What? Like, it all happened so fast. I was just watching it, and I was just like...
That was Rosenthal letting loose right there.
that was the scene right there. Just like, just have fun with it. Yeah. Just have fun with it.
I love how the cop's bumbling out of the car, too. He's like, I hit the kid!
Right, like, I know.
Like, this is a regular occurrence in Haddonfield.
The cop who was just like, he wasn't there 2 seconds ago. Yeah. Like, he was pretty definitely in the middle of the street.
Like, come on, dude. You could have avoided that shit. Like, hands down.
No, yeah. Overall, I would say, in terms of I would give it 2.5 knives out of 5.
Oh, okay. 2.5? You know?
Which is good for me, because normally I rank pretty low. It was good for a sequel. Well,
yeah.
Okay, also, here's the thing, and I should have mentioned this up top, but I am notoriously harsh on sequels. I don't like sequels. I'm not a huge sequel fan.
I like sequels, actually.
I don't like sequels.
I do, but...
They always feel, like... regurgitated or campy or like tired or like
tired sequels are a blemish on a lot of franchises. Yeah, for sure. I agree with that.
Well, and here's the thing is, like, I feel like because I grew up like, or I, you know, surrounded by people who were exhausted by the classic horror franchises being as exhausting as they were, a lot of these, I'm just like, franchises or like sequels just bore me.
Yeah.
After a while.
You're right, because they retread a lot of the same ground typically, and it becomes like a flanderized version of what made it special typically. Yeah. And then, yeah, so it's weird because I like the off the wall sequels. I like the ones that like really fuck with the thing. Because, like, the example of this, it's a different franchise. But I love the first Final Destination movie. I didn't like part two, except maybe the opening. Because it really was like what you're talking about. It was a tired retread of a lot of the stuff that came in the first one.
Yeah.
Now I love number three.
Yeah, I really like Final Destination 3.
Because they don't give a shit anymore. They're like, okay, we understand it's a formula. We're going to just cut all the fat here and not take it seriously. And we're going to be goofy as fuck, but still play it straight.
Well, here's the thing. With Final Destination, after a while, because there's like seven of them.
Yeah.
Like, there's a shit ton of
I think there's five, actually.
Okay, I don't know. I guess I was over exaggerating. But there's a lot of Final Destination movies. And in all of them, I think they know exactly what they are. Like, they're not trying to be anything smarter or dumber than exactly what they are, which I appreciate. And I think that's part of the appeal to the Final Destination franchise. That being said, I can only watch them in small doses. I do like them, though. And so I will cover them one day.
Yeah, no, one day.
Because the first one, actually, because the first one's the airplane, right? Because that's a very...
Yes.
Yeah, that.
The first one is a legitimately good film. Like, as a film.
No, that one, like, by itself, and the fact that it spawned the franchise that it did, like, looking at it completely isolated as, like, its own movie and, like, as a film by itself, it's a really great concept.
And it also, again, the franchise is a good explanation as to, because it really does go back and forth from, like, shit sequel to good sequel, shit sequel to good sequel.
Cause yeah, it's something else that I was just like, bad sequel, but, like, Unfriended has a great sequel.
See, we talked about this before, I have not seen
the second one. I always bring this up, I think I talked about it last week, but, like, Unfriended, the Dark Web, I adore. Like, I like Unfriended, like, I like it. Like,
yeah, no, I really love the first one,
actually. I like the first one, like, and I enjoy it, and it's great, but, like, the second one goes above and beyond what the first one was trying to accomplish.
Interesting. See, well...
In my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, like, when we talk about sequels, the bad ones, again, tired, they stick too close to things that they think worked with the first one. They don't always have an understanding of, like, what makes the franchise tick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think... The franchise as an art form, it's very touchy. And like, if you do one thing wrong, like, the whole thing, like, for me, the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, like, they did everything wrong.
They did. They so did.
They went, like, too hard, too fast into campy territory, and it's just, literally, to me, like, Freddy Krueger is not scary as much as I'm just like... He's just campy to me.
Like, well, yeah, you have to be in the mood for Freddy Krueger to watch a Freddy Krueger film.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, he's not scary.
No, he's definitely not. Even in the first one.
No, there's nothing scary to me about him.
But the meta elements of it, like in New Nightmare and stuff.
I love New Nightmare.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, though. Like, Craven did it.
Yeah.
So the fucker knows what makes the franchise work, which is what you get, like, a random person who's, like, has not the same attachment or understanding the material. It results in bad sequels.
But, yeah, exactly. You see the same thing with Hellraiser.
I've heard the notoriety of Hellraiser's decline.
Yeah, Hellraiser has a very... How the Mighty Fall. The Mighty Fall.
Swath of sequels.
Yes. How about you? What are your thoughts on this?
Honestly, this movie, I think, has an amazing first 20 minutes.
Yes.
Okay. It's amazing. It's like, it's honestly like, even watching as a kid.
I love that you say that, because the first 20 minutes is definitely like the Carpenter, like Rosenthal emulating Carpenter.
It is. It officially is in any documentation of this film. But it's also the best part of the film.
I agree.
Because, like, what do you call Michael Myers in the old people's house? That whole scene.
Stressful.
Stressful, but, like, well fucking shot, man. Like, that felt like it was just straight up like, oh, that was actually, we just cut it from the first film and we just attached it so we can do it. Like, if somebody said that to me, I'd believe it. I would fucking believe
it. There were a couple scenes where I was like, oh, this was really interestingly shot. Like, I appreciate that. There were a couple scenes where, Michael Myers is walking towards the camera and the camera's panning back. Mm-hmm. And, like, I really like those shots.
Those sweeping, like...
Yeah, those sweeping, yeah. like, one... Like, I really liked those shots. So there was, like, a lot of the camera work I found that I actually, for the second half of the movie, I found myself appreciating.
Yeah.
Which typically, like, it takes a lot to take me out of a film enough to appreciate, but, like, not take me so far out that I don't give a shit, mm-hmm. to appreciate the camera work.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's one thing because it captures the feel of the first film very well. The unfortunate part is the script's just not as strong.
Yeah.
It's just not. And the direction, as wonderful as it is, I think the gore kills kind of fuck with it a little bit.
How gory it is.
It's a little too much.
There's parts of it that are gruesome. Yeah. Like, again, the blood with, like, the nurse on the floor with the banana peel mm-hmm. equivalent. Like, that was weird and random.
The syringe in the eye. Yeah.
Completely unnecessary.
And then the boiling water? Jacuzzi bullshit. Where Michael Myers is, like, boiling her head, but his hand's okay.
Well, yeah, that's because he's Michael Myers, right?
You're like, I have these Teflon coating on my hands.
Well, isn't, like, I mean, I know they get into this, but there's, like, a whole lore to Michael Myers where it's, like, he's supposed to, like,
There's, like, a shaman cult bullshit.
Well, there's like, this, yeah, because they also bring in, like, the Samhain, like...
Yeah. No, there's a lot in the sequels.
Well, also, they mispronounce it the entire film, which bugs the shit out of me.
Okay, so you say it's Samhain?
It's Samhain.
Samhain.
Because, no, but during the movie, they're like, Samhain.
Samhain. They say it that way.
They're like, Samhain, and me and DJ are just sitting there just like, it's Samhain.
Well, even on YouTube videos, I see what people reviewing these movies.
I understand, because mm-hmm. the spelling is very misleading. I understand. But do your due diligence, please.
It's so particular on this. I just see it in your eyes right now. You're just like, you motherfuckers respect this shit.
Anyway.
Oh, but real quick, back to my point.
Yeah, please.
Like the film for the first 20 minutes, but when it gets real 80s.
Yeah.
It gets real 80s.
Very 80s,
I think it gets monotonous at that point, which is the shitty part, because it goes to the pacing.
Well,
because
you have, like, these side characters who are like, I'm like, why should I care that you guys are fucking in the hospital? Like, who gives a shit?
There's no established relationship.
Huh?
There's no established relationship. They're like, yeah, okay, I'm new. Let's fuck. Cool. 20 minutes later, dead.
Right, like, I'm like, who gives a shit? And then also, the paramedic, who's very weirdly attached to Lori. Like, I'm just like, why are you attached to Lori? Leave her alone.
Why do you look like Kirk Cameron? What's going on?
No, I'm just like, there is a level of attachment here that I'm just like, what's going on? Please don't be creepy.
Yeah.
And also, why are these nurses letting random paramedics into patients' rooms?
Okay, there's a lot of bullshit. See, there's a lot... It's bad script writing.
It's like... Well, also, I'm just like, the ethics board is going to have a field day with all of you.
The power's out. It's
literally, the power's out. The phone line isn't working. Her parents are nowhere to be found.
Yeah, what are these doctors doing? They're like, oh, I wonder why we're not getting any patients. No information's coming to and from the hospital.
They're just sitting on their hands, just like, I guess it's a slow night, guys.
There's like a backup of ambulances. It's like, where's the gate guy?
It's ridiculous.
But I mean, you know, I think that goes to show the script was bad, but, like, the direction wasn't terrible.
No.
It was honestly pretty good. It did the Carpenter thing pretty well.
Yeah. Aesthetically, and I think visually, there were some really great shots.
Yeah.
I think he did a good job with what he was given. And I think it sucks because it's Carpenter, so no, I think very few are going to actively critique.
Mm-hmm.
What Carpenter's doing, and it sucks that Carpenter and Hill were both just like, it was Rosenthal's fault. It was, you know.
But I mean, Rosenthal had his heart in it, and they didn't. And I think it kind of shows.
And yeah, no, I totally agree. But, like, that's the thing, is, like, if you spend the entirety of your time working on a project doing nothing but bitch about it,
mm-hmm.
and have, like, negative, like, attitudes about it, you're gonna create something shitty. And that's exactly what happened with Carpenter.
Exactly.
He had nothing but a bad attitude and, like, shitty feelings about creating the script, and that's just what he ended up doing. Like, mm-hmm. he ended up creating a shitty script. And you can tell he's not proud of it, because he said so later.
Yeah.
Like, literally, he said so. Like, he's not proud of what he did.
And it's not like that I had to have... It was a hard finding that quote.
Right. It's
There's like, a couple of them I got to pick from, you know?
You had your choice of...
Like, how much is he going to shit on it? What's a good example of him shitting on it?
But it's so unfortunate, because Carpenter and Hill were both shitting on Rosenthal and...
Dickie Warlock.
Dickie Warlock. Thank
Dickie
you.
W.
Like, for basically saying that they ruined the film, and it's just like, no, it was a group effort. Please.
Yeah, it was, exactly. It was some miscommunications and then just overall some blasé attitudes towards the material.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even then, the film survives is just being okay.
Yeah.
Which is probably the best it could hope for, given the circumstances around it. So how do you feel, well, I mean, we talked about this right now, but do you think this is a really good continuation of the first film? Like, does it really match? It does, right?
I think it is a perfectly on par match for the first film for the first 20 minutes.
Yes. It so is. And even then, like, as like whatever as I find it, it's still a good sequel.
I think it's a good successor, and I think Donald Pleasant does a good job, and I think obviously Jamie Lee Curtis does an amazing job. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's all good.
And in the 20 minutes she's in the film.
Yeah. I think, like, I wish I had there was more, but
yeah.
And I think it's such an interesting, there was just so much with, like, I just wanted to be fleshed out more, but with her, I don't know. Just the end. By the end of it, I was just like, "What the fuck did I just watch?"
Yeah, we could have had a little more Jamie Lee Curtis and a little less hospital.
Yeah, I think what was very interesting to me was watching it with DJ. This is DJ's favorite Halloween.
Really?
Like, out of all of them?
Out of even the first one?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which I was just like, noted. So I might and next week I might come back a single a single lady. You're
like, this movie was shit.
I know, because
you're sleeping on the couch.
I know, I did nothing but shit on this movie. So DJ's gonna listen to it and just be like, oh really?
Let me tell you why. Reason number one, y'all are fucking wrong.
And number two, I want my ring back.
Okay, I think we actually talked about a couple of this stuff already.
Yeah.
So going a little broader here, how is this film relative to other slashers?
I think it is so perfectly on par with other slashers.
Yeah.
It does nothing to set it apart.
Slasher 101 almost.
It's rudimentary slasher.
Yes.
Like, I feel like they relied almost too much on the tropes that it created.
Yeah. That, like, it unintentionally created.
Literally, like, Halloween was so fucking groundbreaking because it was the first of its kind to really do this and, like,
in the way it did it.
In the way that it did it. And then in the years that followed, literally everyone and their mom tried their hand at it, and we got all of the slashers, and they fucking did, they made such a shitty choice.
Mm-hmm.
By just saying, let's do exactly what they're expecting us to do.
Yeah, I agree. The formula was, I mean, it obviously it wasn't worn by this time it was made, which is why it was successful. But, like, it was still, there were going to be more slashers.
Yeah.
so for it to stand out, nah.
No.
Like, it just doesn't, unfortunately. The first 20 minutes, again, those stand out.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're just fucking brilliant.
It's a great first 20 minutes. There's, like, some scenes scattered throughout. I really feel like I'll benefit from a rewatch, because I also didn't watch it all in one sitting.
No,
which
I mean,
I might have been doing myself a disservice with that, because I watched it over 2 days.
To be fair, I don't think I've watched this in one sitting in years. Honestly,
this
week when I saw it in one sitting was probably the first time in a long time where I actually did that.
Well, also, because, like, that's why I was just like, it was a struggle, because I think I watched the first half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped.
That's funny.
And then I watched the last hour last night.
You're, like, watching the first half hour, you're like, wow, this is going to be a good one. And the last hour, you're like, oh.
Oh, God.
It's the same thing. Thing,
yeah, I'm
actually.
Just like, oh God, what have I done? I've made a horrible mistake.
Okay, we've actually talked about this.
Yeah.
But I do want a little elaboration. So, how do you feel about the twist of Michael and Laurie being siblings? And do you think it set a good basis for the series to continue? Or should it have been excised?
No.
No, no siblings.
I hate it. It's a horrible twist. Are you kidding me?
So do you just hate the way they did it, or just the fact that it exists?
I hate that they threw it in there. I think it set it up. I think it set the franchise up for, like, unnecessary drama.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I don't know. I think if they had done it well, and if they had done the story justice, I would have, like, I think it would have been a really cool twist.
Mm-hmm.
But literally, they didn't set it up right.
it's weird. It restricted the franchise going forward.
Yeah. Well, again, also, we go into this. So I did not see 3 because it's Season of the Witch and it has nothing to do with anything ever. I have seen 4. I have seen 5. And then 6 gets weird.
Yeah.
I know. And, like, I know, like, the more you go, the more, like, demonic it gets.
Yeah.
And it also gets, like, Michael Myers and, like, I don't know, and, like, the Antichrist or, like, the Spawn of Satan or whatever. I don't know.
The cult bullshit.
Yeah, there's, like, cult stuff, and I know it gets into weird, like, satanic bullshit, and it just, like, what does this have... And I know that ties into them being siblings, and, like, what? And...
Your mind is frying right now. I can see you attempting to compute it.
It's bullshit. And I know, anyway, I know, the point is I know it's all tied together, and I think it's bullshit, and I don't like that they're siblings, and I wish that they weren't, and I think the franchise would be so much better off if they weren't, and I feel like I just need to watch the first Halloween to make myself feel better.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it is, this thing was intended to be the final film. So it's like, I understand, like, throwing a twist to, like, cap it off kind of thing. But like, it's so restrictive, though.
Ellori doesn't even know that they're siblings.
Yeah, she doesn't, huh?
No, they don't tell her. They don't ever pull her aside.
Because the nurse tells Loomis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one ever pulls her aside at any point, like...
Like, by the way, that's your brother fucking with you.
Yeah, at the end of the film, no one pulls her aside and you're like, by the way, you just murdered your fucking brother.
Yeah.
You know? Like, no one does that. And, I mean, obviously that would have been weird, and I'm glad that they didn't, because that would have just added insult to injury. But, also, the way they set it up for both Loomis to be murdered and for... Which, by the way, because I know he survived through the movie, and we made it to the other sequels, I'm sitting here and I'm like, how did he live?
Oh yeah.
How did he survive that?
Well, because it wasn't planned.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, literally, I'm sitting there watching everyone go kablooey, and I turn to DJ, and I'm like, how did he survive that? I know he's in the sequels.
Well, because the sequels follow even more hardcore 80s slasher rules, and that in those rules, what? Nobody ever dies.
Well, this, also, in true, like, any movie, any action film, any horror film, anything where there's any death, if there's no body, they're not dead. If I don't, if I do not see a body, they are not dead in the movie. Like, they're all, because that always gives them the option to bring them back.
Exactly. Which is weird, because that wasn't really established at this time, which is why you see Michael Myers' body up close. And actually, the close-up, if I recall correctly, was a choice by Carpenter, not Rosenthal. Rosenthal had a different way of doing it, but the up-close, like, he's fucking dead, look at it, was a Carpenter decision, actually.
Well, yeah, because Carpenter was just like, can we finish this, please? Can we end this, please? But I think, I don't know, because, again, how Michael Myers is just, like, literally, he is shot in both of his eyes. Laurie Strode is amazing shot.
Yeah, fucking ace, right?
Amazing shot.
Very ridiculous, actually.
No, again, improbable headshots, like, 101, like...
Dude, and, like...
one eye, done.
Like, when she shoots, like, her hand is moving with this fucking gun. She's just like, bah! Ooh, another one, bah!
For those of you at home who are not watching this, because there are no cameras, Anthony just, like, did, like, a 90-degree, like...
Oh, yeah.
arm movement, like...
A full-on arc.
Yeah, no, like, there's no way. But she also... Great shot for someone. And then also there's Mr. Dr. Loomis over here, who's a horrible shot, who managed to shoot him 6 times, and he didn't stay down.
No, yeah, he missed the eyes completely all 6 times. And he's like, I like how he's like shimmying around. He's like, go, get out of here. And then he says his line.
And then... At that very ending scene, what pissed me off is, like, he's just like, okay, Lori, here's your gun. I'm gonna take my gun and go shoot him over here.
Yeah.
And then he goes to shoot him, and there are no bullets in his gun, because can't count, and he's an idiot.
It's like they're both playing 2 players on a video game, where they're fighting a boss,
yeah.
And she, like, didn't have loot, and he dropped loot, and he's like, ah, fuck, I actually was supposed to hold on to that one.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's exactly what happened. That is literally exactly what happened.
He's on the last section of his health bar, so it's all you, buddy.
Yeah, you're the one holding this together. But no, it's...
Good analogy.
Yeah, that was a great analogy. Good job, nerd.
You're like fucking nerd. Oh, but speaking of Michael here, Dick Warlock, how do you think old Dickie W. did as Michael Myers?
I liked it. I do think he walked a little slow.
He did. He totally walked a little slow. Like, not his fault. Not his fault.
Mm-mm. I think the scene where Laurie is running into the elevator and, like, he sticks his hand into the elevator,
mm-hmm.
and then he just moves his hand out of the elevator and the door closes the rest of the way. DJ and I clowned him very hard for that. DJ and I were both just like, was he just like, we'll let her have that one. Like, he was just tired of running or walking?
Right? He's like, no, I know I made it here, but like, I'll just swing around. It's fine.
I know. She's like, I'll catch up with you later. Like, what the fuck?
I feel like Nick Castle would have been like, he could actually pull that move off a little bit. But yeah, he doesn't glide. It's unfortunate. And I think he probably had the potential to. But he just...
Yeah, he didn't have the glide to it. Mm-hmm. I mean...
He can stand like a motherfucker.
He has the stand.
Yeah.
He has the stand. He can stand very still and mm-hmm. very, like, menacingly.
You know what? He's not as rigid as later Michael Myers either.
Mm-mm.
He still has a little bit of a flow to the way he, like, guts people and, like, does that.
He also, parts of him, like, you know, he still looks like a person.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the thing. It's like, Michael Myers, I mean, in essence, is not supposed to... be a person.
I mean, true, but like the first two films, he has like there's a tangibleness to his movements.
Yeah, in the first one for sure, he's like, I mean, since he's like escaped from the insane asylum or whatever,
mm-hmm.
he's like a person, you know?
Yeah.
But Donald Pleasance, man, he has it for Michael Myers.
Yeah,
he's
hard for catching this motherfucker. He is.
Literally, like, this whole movie, he is insane. Like, he's incensed. Yes. Catching Michael Myers. It's in, like, I...
It's
the
an
whole
obsession.
Time, it's obsessive.
And he's,
truly.
Like, dismissing everybody. He's like, tell the hospital some other bullshit. I'm here. I'm right here.
Literally, he holds a police officer at gunpoint and is like, turn the car around. Like, what?
This is the beginnings of Crazy Loomis, actually.
Oh,
like,
God.
Straight up.
Well, I mean, he's kind of been crazy since the get-go. So I can't wait to see where... Crazy, crazy Loomis comes from.
Good old Halloween 5, guys. When we get there, that'll be fun.
Goodness gracious.
Okay, so a couple more, but...
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis, is this a good retirement for her Scream Queen kind of thing, or do you feel she could have gone off on a stronger note?
I almost wish, like, Prom Night was, like...
The capper?
Her, like... final one, you know?
That would have made sense, actually.
Well, also, I just feel like there's, like, a poetic, like... thing to it.
Yeah.
There's poetic justice to it being, like, you know,
titled Prom Night.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I think, yeah, I wish that her final Scream Queen title mm-hmm. horror film had a little bit more gravitas to it.
Yeah, I agree.
But
because I mean, this one is, as much as I do like the film,
mm-hmm.
like as but you know, again, it's a flawed sequel, but like, Prom Night itself, I feel like, has more horror iconography in it.
Yeah.
That's, like, its own.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have actually been a good capper versus this where it was retreading.
Well, I think it's interesting because, like, in those, what, 4 years, she rose and had her time as Scream Queen. And then she was like, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and then she had a really big Hollywood career.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a big one, actually.
So she just retired from horror.
Mm-hmm.
After that, she was just like, I'm done. No more horror.
Pretty much. I mean, until she did the Halloween sequels,
right.
Obviously.
Well, obviously. But that's, like, when she was, you know, older.
Older. Yeah, for sure. But for the like, the actual, like, her and her prime career stuff, she wanted to broaden the same way Carpenter did. She wanted to not do the same things. And it worked out for her, luckily, because she's fucking Jamie Lee Curtis.
Right. Everyone knows who she is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Precisely. Fantasy time here, actually. Let's say that this film was set years later and did the high-rise thing as proposed early in development. Do you think it would have hit the same beats, or do you think it would have been a completely different film? Like,
I would have loved to see Jamie Lee Curtis, like, years later, like...
In college?
I'm thinking, like, either... like fresh out of college, mm-hmm. like literally her like first apartment in like a high rise, like literally like she finally like she sees a psychiatrist like, you know, every other week, like trying to get like through her shit because
early adult Laurie Strode. I like that. I like that.
Like I would love in like her high rise apartment, like mm-hmm. literally just trying like. But, like, literally living her life and going through her shit, but also still dealing with the trauma of Halloween. Mm-hmm. Because, obviously, like, that's a traumatic experience for anyone to go through in high school.
Yeah, for during fundamental years.
Well, yeah, and also, like, I mean, you know, the kids were involved, and, like, she was obviously very, very upset and traumatized mm-hmm. by everything. Like, she refused to be put under in Halloween 2.
Yeah.
You know, like, so there was some baseline trauma involved. So I think that and, like, the fear associated with that, and then also the claustrophobia of feeling trapped in your own apartment.
Your home, that's
in
right.
In a high-rise where it's like there's nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been a very interesting concept to play with.
I think that would have been nice. I agree. It's weird because it would have been hard to emulate Carpenter's style in that setting.
Yes.
I feel like.
I think it would have had to have been a different director, and I think yes. it would have had to have been more than 4 years later.
Exactly. And it would have been their film. Like they would have to basically be like, it's new, it's mine, let me do it. Kind of thing. And
yeah, it would have definitely had to have been more like a reimagining instead mm-hmm. of like a sequel.
It has to, and you know, to be like as Laurie centric, I think, like it really, she has to be in like not 20 minutes of fucking runtime.
Yeah.
It's got to be her film. So yeah, hypothetically, the way you just pitched it right now, I totally watch that.
Yeah.
I would watch that in a fucking heartbeat. I was thinking college, but like, I was also thinking it's kind of retread, of course, but mm-hmm. with that more original take on it, I think that would have been a fun way to do it. But also, it wouldn't have been a franchise capper at all. Mm-hmm. It would have just been the next Halloween. This obviously was intended to be the final.
Well, here's the thing: is this was also intended? Well, what I mean, yeah, it was intended to be like a capper, I guess. Mm-hmm. But also, this was intended to just cash in on the slasher franchise.
Double meaning, that's right. It was truly supposed to, yeah, it's supposed to be the end of the Myers storyline, but also a cash grab.
Yeah.
Two like very conflicting kind of thing.
It was a 2-for-1. And I think that's also part of the reason why the story was so conflicting in so many places, because mm-hmm. like Carpenter is just like, we have to rely on these horror tropes that I helped create while also, you know, trying to be somewhat creative, and it's mm-hmm. just like that doesn't work. You can't be groundbreaking and reliant on tropes at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. So I guess that actually leads to my last question, which I think you kind of answered, but
let's go into it.
Do you think this fits as a franchise capper as originally planned? Like, if it was just in that context, would it have been a satisfactory ending to the Myers storyline?
If this was the last one...
of the Myers storyline, yeah.
Ever?
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, sure, like, let's say they did the anthology thing, and they just kept doing new Halloweens. So what, as the Michael Myers story...
I think it would be a disappointing ending, but I think I'd be fine with it.
Okay, I can accept. I think, honestly, my answer exactly emulates yours. It would have been a little disappointing. Again, the first 20 minutes, solid as fuck.
Yeah,
but I'd be okay.
Yeah, I don't think I would... I honestly feel like, to an extent, I don't think I would be filled with as much rage as I am now. Because here's the thing. It's like, Halloween has become a monster.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally, we've had so many reboots. We've had so many sequels. We've lived through Halloween, what is it, the one that's awful? Resurrection?
Yeah. We lived through Halloween Resurrection, guys. Oh, by the way, also directed by Rick Rosenthal.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So who knows what the fuck's going on there, because, yeah.
So, you know, we've lived through Halloween Resurrection. So I think we've seen a lot mm-hmm. for Halloween. And I think my opinion on the franchise is definitely colored by the amount of, not, I don't want to say bullshit, but the amount of content that we have from the franchise.
Well, I think we said this last time, was Halloween's a weird franchise where it has one good one, has a couple shit ones, then it has a good one again.
Mm-hmm.
But then that leads to a couple more shit ones. But then, I mean, that's just the cycle
that
it has.
I still haven't seen the new one.
I think it counts as a good one. but it's not like a great one.
Well, I mean, has there really been a great one?
I'd say H2O is probably
the
most
the last great one.
But you're right, because it's not great, but it's like bordering on great. I think.
Literally, Halloween 1 is the great one.
It's but like that, the great one.
I know,
one,
but
though.
That's the thing, though. Is like it is the capital T, the great one.
Yeah,
like,
not even just amongst Halloween, like amongst slashers. Like, amongst slashers, it's the great one.
No, I totally agree. So, I think it's hard to compare it to anything else. So, I think in terms of, like, lower tier, mm-hmm. not lower tier, but, like, you know, next tier. Because Halloween's, like, at the top. Like, literally nothing really can beat it out in that context. Because, you know.
Well, I also think this one, like, as a franchise capper, if it would have kept at that, it would have been a situation where there's people obviously clearly know the first one's better. But this would have had its, like, cult fans, mm-hmm. if that was it. But now, those cult fans have so many more movies to pull from, so it kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, and there's a ton of content for it, so it's, like, there's something for everyone, and I'm sure not everyone is going to agree with us on this, even though we tend to be on the same page for a lot of it.
Yeah.
But
sometimes we shit on beloved stuff. We're sorry, guys.
Well, I have a question for you, since we haven't done this in a while. What was your kill of the film?
I don't really like the kills in this one, to be honest with you. I would say that fucking teenage 17-year-old motherfucker getting ran over and the cop just stumbling out of his fucking car. I
the
love that.
The 17-year-old just bursting into flames.
Bursting into flames.
Literally, but here's the thing. It's like, that was the fastest, most immediate death in the entire movie.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's the kill of the film because it's so garbagey.
Yeah, it's trashy. It is a trashy death because it's campy.
It is.
It's like a certain level of camp that like kind of sets the tone for the rest of the movie because that's what feels out of place.
Yeah.
His death is what feels so out of place because it's like he was covered in gasoline and like carrying a match or mm-hmm. something because this car hits him and it's like...
Psst.
Yeah, I don't even know, it's like he was a tinderbox or some shit, because he just, like, it's like the car hits him and he bursts into flames.
Well,
like,
this mask smells like lacquer, but I don't know, like, cause I guess I'm still fine with it, I'm just gonna trick-or-treat, you know?
I know, I like the smell.
You're like, well, here's my dad's fucking jumpsuit.
Right, my dad's, like, you know, my dad, the house painter or whatever.
Yeah.
Does this smell like turpentine to you?
Boy, what a fun Halloween already. I'm getting the fumes right now. Why are those police officers looking at me?
Yeah. Why are you looking at me? And then just immediately dead. Like, and
but, like, kill of the film, though? Like, the reason why is, to me, it gives you an indication as to some of the places Halloween will go.
That's true.
It's a good like, foreshadowing of, like, hey, as cool as the last 20 minutes as you saw... We're going to enter you into now. That's the capper, the transition point into kind of the shittiness of the franchise sometimes. It's not the whole rest of the movie, but you're going to see elements of that.
Yeah, for me, it's it has no explanation, but the jacuzzi in the hospital? Mm-hmm. Question mark? Why is there a jacuzzi in the hot tub? Because
they needed
to
kill some motherfuckers. That's why.
Well, I loved that death. That was a mm-hmm. very fun death.
It's a fun death, yeah.
It was also, like, it just reminds me of, like, a couple other, like, horror movie deaths that I've seen before, like, that mm-hmm. have come after. So I'm not sure if it's just, like, they just didn't do the reading.
Yeah.
Or if they're, like, kind of, you know, nodding at Halloween 2. But I do like that one a lot.
You know what's funny? I actually think that's a Jason Voorhees death.
Yeah.
That's a Jason Voorhees kill. But that's Hockey Mask Jason Voorhees death. Mm-hmm. Hockey Mask Jason Voorhees was not invented yet. That guy was still one movie away by the time this motherfucker got released.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what? Man, probably pretty influential little scene right there, too, like, to be honest with you, because all the big dogs later on had those kind of kills, like, for sure. So, good kill to film there, too, because it's emblematic of where horror would go.
Definitely.
Versus the one where I picked, where the franchise would go.
You know, it's funny, because we did, DJ, while I was editing this podcast,
mm-hmm.
well, not this episode, but you know what I mean.
Previous, yeah.
while I was working on the podcast, DJ was watching Freddy vs. Jason in the living room.
Fun
movie. But then that got me thinking. I was just like, okay, Freddy versus Jason versus Michael. Like, I'm like, what is that like?
What
does that look like?
Dude, because, like, Freddy and Jason can fight all they want. They're going to walk into a room and, like, there's going to be bodies and shit, like, stacked around. And Michael Myers is going to be creeping and stuff. Because he's the troll killer.
Yeah, no, I totally
he's
agree.
He's all setups, man. He's not like Jason who just brutes his way through. I mean, he does sometimes, but he's mostly, like, just...
No, he's
feeding you shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because, like, they also all have, like, they all have magical or, mm-hmm. like, some kind of, like, you know, psychic ability or of some sort.
Yeah, some metaphysical shit.
Right, exactly.
Goes on
that's
with
what
them.
I meant to say. Like, metaphysical, some shit or another. And then they're over here, like, there's Michael who, like, depending on what day of the week it is and how he's feeling, may or may not be possessed by Satan. I'm not entirely sure. But outside of that, he's just. A dude with a knife.
Exactly.
Like, trying to stab some people, you know?
Mm-hmm. And his kills aren't like, I mean, yeah, they're bloody sometimes, like this movie, but then they're also sometimes he's like, I'm just gonna choke a bitch. Mm-hmm. Like,
exactly.
I'm just gonna do that, and that's it.
And that's the thing. And, like, again, I had this conversation with DJ about why Freddy does not scare me at all.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, literally, he's like a fairy. Like, you just don't believe in him, and he loses all of his power. Like, literally, that's it.
I think he's not necessarily, I mean, he's a horror icon, but his horror is less scary, and it's more entertaining.
Well, again, one of those things, like Nightmare on Elm Street is like, I love Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't care for the sequels.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's one of those, like, sacrilegious things where it's like the classic horror stuff where it just isn't necessarily my cup of tea, which sucks, but, you know, I'm learning. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think Freddy has his entertainment value.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, Michael Myers, even in this movie, you know, he can still be menacing. Like, again,
for
20
sure.
minutes with those old people. And with the young girl outside her house, everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of Michael Myers everybody's waiting for in every sequel.
Yeah.
And we don't always get it, but when we do, we're very, very happy to get it. With that, though.
I think
we're good.
I think we're good.
I think we did it, guys. Halloween 2 in the books. Again, if you're following from Halloween 1, thank you for following our look through the production. We're going to be bringing you guys Halloween 3. This Halloween.
So you can look forward to that, and, you know, that's our little spoiler, I guess, but, I mean, we've revealed the pattern, so you can kind of anticipate it.
Yeah.
So this was Halloween 2 from 1981, directed by Rick Rosenthal. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Next week, we're going to kind of ease you into May.
Yeah.
Wow, it's already May.
I know.
What the fuck?
Fucking A. But we're going to do something different next week, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we
have something different next week, and I think you guys will like it. We're kind of, I'm not going to say too much other than it's something different. And
yeah, it actually is very wildly different, so we're totally not going to spoil this one.
Yeah. Other than it's truly wildly different than anything that we've done so far. Like, it's completely different. So that's all I'm going to say. But thank you so, so much for listening. Thank you so much for all of the support we've gotten over the past 6 months. The fact that we've only been doing this for 6 months and we've gotten so much love and everything from all of you has been so cool. Like,
yes.
I can't even begin to describe. I can't wait to see where the next 6 months takes us.
I know. I can't either.
And the next 6 months after that, and so on and so forth, until we've been doing this forever and ever.
I can't wait till we finally get to do Halloween H2O. Like the person I'm going to be is going to be a different person than them, but when we do it, I'm going to gush the same fucking way.
So, yeah, thank you so much for everyone. I know there's a bunch of you who have been listening since the very, very beginning, and we love you for sticking with us so far for 30 episodes.
Yeah.
30 weeks.
30
which
weeks,
means,
Jesus.
What? That means 22 more weeks, and then we're at a year.
We're at a year. Right there. Well, fucking.
Wow.
There you go.
That's intense. But yeah, so thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Please, 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 if you like what you heard, please tell a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Send, you know, we're everywhere where you get your podcast. So, you know, telling someone can mean, you know, the world to us and can be totally life-changing.
What was it last week you said? Horror bees? You just type in horror B and then we come up.
Yeah. So if you type in horror B, like all one word, we're actually the third person that pops up. So you don't have to spell out. I know our name is a little confusing if you say Horrible People's Podcast. So if you just type in horror B, we're like the third person to pop up. So it's super simple on iTunes. You just type that up and then we're right there. And then all you have to do is like scroll to the bottom and click 5 stars. And then you can, you know, go on with your day and then know that you've, you know, gave me a little bit more will to live. So
yeah, only a little bit more, probably a lot more will to live. A lot, actually. But we got to beat those other horror bees, all right? In fact, I would like to call our fan base the Horror Bees.
I love that. I love it.
Oh my god, I'm kind of digging that. Cool. All right.
I'm great.
Fuck it. The confirmed.
I'm cool with it. But yeah, so that's where you can, you know, give us all those likes and reviews and all that stuff. It means the world to us. If you want to find us on social media, please follow us there. We post on Instagram all the time. I'm on Twitter all the time. We try to keep it updated and, you know, post relevant horror news content, all of that stuff. So if you like horror and you want to, you know, keep up to date with all of the episodes, we love talking to you guys, and that's actually one of the fastest, best ways to get in contact with us. So you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And you can find us on Twitter at Horror People Pod. If you want to follow me, I'm super active on both Twitter and Instagram. I am at Ghost Coffee Shop on both of those platforms. Anthony is active on Instagram, not so much on Twitter, but you can find him on both of those platforms at Hyrulean Hustler.
Damn, your reads are solid today. I'm loving that. Ah, so, can't even contribute. Find me there.
Yeah, so thank you so much, everyone, for joining us, and we will catch you next week.
All right, peace out, horror bees, you fucks.
Bye, guys.